All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. I made it. It is 43 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It's actually a very beautiful fall day today. The kitty cats are running around playing leapfrog, laying in the sunshine. So that sounds like a good day to me. Well, where did we leave off Friday? I don't think we're going to go back there today. It was a rough one. Last 4 days. I don't know. I'm getting to that point of year. It's been pretty nonstop since January, and it's already November, guys. No wonder I'm feeling like beaten down. I try and get up in the morning, and sometimes it's just way harder than others, especially when you're dealing with technical issues. Actually, knock on wood, today seems to be okay, but yesterday was Monday morning blues. All right, so here we go. Where do we leave off on Friday? It was titled Fake Food with a PH, Fake Food, No Food Safety and Sound as a Pesticide, and there was some pretty interesting stories that we had read in regards to some of the crazy things that they're doing with our foods. We talked about the Flavor Saver tomato and them making vaccines out of food. I mean, we've dug deep into all that stuff over the last 6 months or so. One of the things I wanted to remind you about that I don't know if I actually ran into while we were talking about any of this, but maybe way back, but I found it while I was doing the notes for the show. Don't forget, Bill Gates and a lot of the other tech titans have all dumped money into a brand new CRISPR gene editing company. Let's pull that up quick. This is this CRISPR technology that at some point here is going to get us into a lot of trouble, I think. We talked about little Johnny. Things are getting so cheap and easy now. Little Johnny will be able to have his own biologics kit in his garage for $29.95 bought on, you know, hottoys.com. And that's a really scary thought. Well, here we go. So this is from August 10th of 2015. Bill Gates and 13 other investors pour $120 million into revolutionary gene editing startup. 4 years ago, the protein called CRISPR-Cas9, which is an enzyme that bacteria use to attack viruses that infect them, was unknown to humans. Now it is ubiquitous in science labs as the most efficient way of cutting and pasting DNA invented yet. Wired magazine, in a breathless cover story, just called it the Genesis Engine. And yeah, that Genesis Engine story is enough to make your hair stand on end. Because it really is the Genesis Engine. Like I've said, proclaiming ourselves to be gods and being able to create and manipulate life at the touch of a button, like the DARPA lady said, is a massive recipe for disaster. The Genesis Engine was the name they called it, instructing readers to quote-unquote buckle up. Yeah, buckle up, Chuck. Because the easy DNA editing, CRISPR, will change the world. And you know, here's something that's really disturbing. I actually was thinking about this just before I called it a night down here last night and went up to bed. But, you know, when we were growing up, as our own children are growing up, we were always reassured that there were no such things as monsters. Now, as a parent, you know, of course, you can look at the literal versus the hypothetical monster. Keep them away from pedophiles and lunatics. I would consider those monsters. But in the future, what are future, like, I was just sitting out here postulating, what are future parents going to tell their kids? Is my kid going to think that I lied to her 10 years, 15, 20 years from now when there's, like, Cyclops and Minotaurs and who the hell knows what else? Large worm-sucking creatures on two legs? Bipedal? I don't know. I mean, what is this going to lead to? This bothers me, I think, more than anything that we've covered. This gene stuff and this CRISPR drive and just how easy it is to cut and paste just bothers me so beyond. You don't even know. Anyway, and now at least one CRISPR-focused company has the cash to back the hype. Editas, E-D-I-T-A-S, Editas Medicine, based where? Oh, Cambridge, Massachusetts, another one. Already had money. Founded in November 2013 with $43 million from Third Rock Ventures, Polaris Ventures, and Flagship Ventures. It was the first big CRISPR effort out of the gate. The company says that the money has not yet been spent. And in May, Juno Therapeutics, which is developing cell therapies for cancer, inked a collaboration that gave Editas another $25 million up front and another $22 million for research and support, and any products that result could deliver Editas another $250 million. Wow! This sounds like a cash cow! With Bill Gates and 13 other investors. And that's what I'm saying. This is that precision medicine. Remember when we dug in deep to the Obamacare and his precision medicine initiative? And how his edict was all about how this is going to be for growing the economy in the 21st century. At what cost? Mad science gone mad for a profit. Who in their right mind would look at the direction that we're heading right now? And I've told you guys before about, like, seeing timelines. There's a lot of timelines when you're standing back there 5 years previous. You'd see this entire gamut of timelines of all the possibilities that could happen in the future. And as you get closer and closer and closer to that period in time, those timelines reduce based upon things that have happened in that last 5 years, right? Okay, so aliens didn't land. Well, those timelines go away. And as you get right on top of it, like we are now with this CRISPR technology, I look down the timelines, and the timelines that are left, considering the actions that we've taken and the disruptive technologies that seem to have taken over for a profit, our future is not looking that good. You can argue all you want with me about how CRISPR drives going to cure cancer. I don't want to hear it. It's going to cure cancer, and it's going to make X-Men. Even worse, Chinese X-Men, because they're already screwing with it in the lab. All right. I would have to say, if I got a red button right now, it is this CRISPR technology. Because it just leads to so many other things. All right. So they're going to make all kinds of bazillions of dollars. Says, but those investments are dwarfed by today's announcement, which will put $120 million into the tiny company's bank account. Enough, Edita says, to keep it running for a projected 3 years. The lead investor is a newly created firm called, oh, how cute, Pingo, B-N-G-O, a selected group of family offices led by Boris Nikolic, who is a previous science advisor to Bill Gates. Both Adidas and Gates's office confirm that the Microsoft billionaire, who happens to be the richest man in the world, is, and a eugenicist, is among Bingo's backers. Also included in the $120 million funding round, take a deep breath, Deerfield Management, Viking Global Investors, Fidelity Management and Research, funds and accounts managed by T. Rowe Price and Associates, Google Ventures, Jennison Associates on behalf of certain clients, Kosla Ventures, Eco R1 Capital, Casdin Capital, Omega Funds, Cone Private Investments, and Alexandria Venture Investments. They appreciate the vast potential of this science, says Katrine Bosley, the chief executive of Adidas. And the heart of the conversation we had with everybody is how you translate this very exciting young science into treatments and therapy, she said. It is a big leap for technology that has yet to be even yet tried in patients. And here's the thing, though. Remember, this story is from August. We have now read in the last few months that they've been working on editing embryos in China. And then the little girl with leukemia, don't forget, right? We saw that, too, where they're trying to cure her of leukemia by editing her genome live. Once they get the stuff into you, this replicates all throughout your body. They go in. So the way it works is like there's little bacteria, and I think they suck the guts out and they put other guts in there. And then those guts go and do their bidding. And what it happens to do is, and I don't know what's early, guys, takes like, I don't know if it was a virus. I don't know. They use bacteria and viruses and they turn them into zombies, but it allows them to go very carefully and snip sections of DNA out and then take other DNA and stick it in there in its place. They can flip proteins on and off, and we saw that. That's what they were doing in the mosquitoes. And think about this in your kid. Think about this in medicine. And like I said, they are just learning this stuff. And when you touch one button, it might affect 37 others that they just don't know about yet. So I don't know about you, but I am absolutely not getting in line for this. It's just like I always said about Microsoft. Never install a 1.0. You don't want to be a 1.0 because that's where they make all the mistakes. Probably even 2.0. You want to be like version 7. All right. Anyway, it's a big leap for technology that hasn't yet even been tried in patients as of the story. Especially since the intellectual property landscape around CRISPR-Cas9 is treacherous. And that is another big question. You know, we've talked about the whole question of being able to patent life with Monsanto. Monsanto creating GMOs, synthetic versions of biological things, and then claiming patent on them. I just saw recently, I think it was Heather, posted a story about Monsanto supposedly, and this happened like way back when, I think it was even Monsanto, who had put the first patent on a living organism, and there was a challenge to that. And a ruling came back that basically it said, well, you can't patent life, or at least life that's out there naturally occurring. You can't, you know, take a bird and patent it or whatever. But if you screw things up royally, you can patent that one. And that's really kind of where this whole beginnings came from, of trying to duplicate everything in a synthetic format, because then they can own it. But here's the question. Now, as this technology has gotten out, And I mean, genies out of the bottle everywhere. And they're flying around bumping into walls. And we've been eating things like the Flavor Saver tomato. And who the hell knows what else. GMO corn for sure. And it was years before I knew about GMO corn. It was probably only the last like 3 years I learned. 4 years I learned about GMO corn. But it's been on the marketplace for a long time. GMO soy. Now we have the sugar beets. And that sugar beet sugar. Look it up. That sugar beet sugar is in a lot of different foods. So even if you don't eat beets, you might be consuming that GMO sugar beet sugar. But you know, we've, in all of our research now, we've dug in as to how there definitely is potential for the DNA of the food that we consume, the RNA fragments, to get into our bloodstream and to incorporate itself into our DNA. We've read about how that's happening with vaccines. We read about, and that's out of Stanford University, mind you. That was that one new study. I published that and I posted it with a picture so I can find it easily. You know, we read about them thinking that there's some issue, some unknown mechanism is what the study said, as to how this DNA is leaching through that blood barrier in our lower intestines and getting into our bloodstream all in one piece to be able to then integrate itself into our own DNA without being properly digested and broken down into its component parts. So even if there's just one study, and there isn't, there's a couple now, but even if there was just one study that showed that, it would be enough for me to have some concern that we got mad science going on here. We don't know what they're doing. It's getting into our bodies and it potentially is altering our DNA by being taken up and incorporated. I mean, it's synthetic. It's bastardized. So here's the question. In the future, the day they drop the bombshell to say, hey, guess what? We've been genetically modifying people for 20 years. And we knew that. But they never came out and said that. I used to think people who talked about this stuff were complete loop-de-loo. They're not. I think that's exactly what they're doing. We're getting all the tests. And they're waiting to see, as they turn it up, boiling frog, what's going to happen. But how long is it going to be before they start claiming that they own your genetic makeup? We're going to look at California. California has been DNA databasing babies since 1983. And, you know, I would almost guarantee you that New York probably is on that bandwagon as well. I know they do the cord blood tests and put them in a database for all the kids here. I just don't know how long that it's been going on for, but at least for the last 9 or 10 years. But who really is going to own your DNA? And are you going to truly be human 1.0 anymore once this happens? And is that going to be, once it is post-economy, we touched on that briefly last week, the transhumanists think that when the robots come and take all the jobs, it's going to be so wonderful because we can just all get our, I don't remember what they call it, your paltry sum every month. We all just get this universal payment to survive and it'll all be utopia and we can lay around and eat grapes and talk philosophical ideas. It's not going to be that way. All right. Anyway, getting back to the CRISPR-Cas9, I want to finish this and move on. Anyway, especially since intellectual property landscapes around CRISPR-Cas9 is treacherous. And that's kind of what got us on that tangent. So pay attention. Because don't forget, too, we got the TPP that's working its way to big pointy teeth to come bite us all in the ass. And there's a lot of copyright and patent information in there. New laws, global laws. And this intellectual property thing is a big part of the TPP. And genes are going to probably be included. Remember, there was a whole section in there protecting Big Pharma with all their new drugs. And we read about them, that the old school drugs, the biologics, quote unquote, that's what they were calling them. So that's a scary thought. Just thinking that they're calling now, I was reading after on Friday, we had talked about something called the biome, I think it was. I don't remember what it was called, but I think they were calling it the biome. But it is literally the entire global database broken down by country and once you're within the country, then by city, and it's all mapped and Googled out and everything, but it's a huge database where they're working on barcoding all of life on this planet. And they even have little projects for the school children to help and submit their information so they can barcode some local birds. How disturbing is that? Barcoding all of life and putting it into a database so it could be bagged and tagged and dissected, spliced, diced, mixed and matched, and turned into a mutant freak. That's all this leads to. All right, anyway, let's get back to this because there's something interesting. So this company that Bill Gates and friends, Editas, has all kinds of money. So this is a big leap for technology that hasn't yet been tried in patients. Like I said, this is from August, the leukemia girl. And in China, they've been messing with it. Especially since the intellectual property landscape around CRISPR-Cas9 is treacherous. Jennifer Doudna, we've heard of her many times. And Emmanuel Charpentier published the first paper detailing how to use the enzyme to cut DNA. So it's actually an enzyme. They filed for a patent using it to edit the DNA of cells with nuclei, like those of plants, animals, and people too. But Feng Zhang of the Broad Institute filed a separate patent on using it in cells with nuclei, and it was granted first. Oh, so what are Feng Zhang's in China where they've been messing with it on embryos already? Doudna, who originally happened to be a founder at where? Oh, Editas. Yes, Doudna, the one who supposedly discovered CRISPR, happens to be the founder of the gene editing company that Bill Gates and everyone's investing in. Doudna, originally an Editas founder, has licensed her patent to another Cambridge, Massachusetts-based company called Intellia, I-N-T-E-L-L-I-A. Charpentier has licensed two CRISPR therapeutics based in Basel. Zhang's patent is licensed to Editas, so I don't know. It's like the merry-go-round. Let's all just figure out crazy ways to kill humanity and then make bazillions of dollars off of it as we sit and watch the world burn. Jim Flynn, a managing partner, Deerfield Capital Management, says that he thinks Editas has very strong intellectual property positions, but that it wasn't his most important concern. Better to go get the market first, he argues, than to have the best intellectual property. Yeah, so guess what? The market. So Obama and Congress and Big Pharma have all, and hey, the DOD as well, as part of DARPA and all their biologics, mad science gone mad, sprinkle it at all the universities and the hospitals. They've all been setting this up real nicely. So now we got this bioeconomy. And we got all these new technologies for experimenting on people. We'll tell them we'll cure cancer. Like, yeah! You know what? That's at least 20 years worth of profits. And I mean big profits. And it is. I mean, I really don't want to talk about their financials anymore. So anyway, Editas CEO Bosley says that creating new treatments is her focus. Other companies are probably already using CRISPR-Cas9 to try to discover new drugs. But Editas is focusing on gene therapy, on using viruses and other methods to deliver CRISPR-Cas9 proteins into the cells of sick patients and edit the very DNA that is making them ill. And yes, see, that's the one therapy. So there's different things that they're doing here. So I guess they're using enzymes are what the actual CRISPR technology are that go in and snip out the pieces that they don't want to, and then be able to replace them. But the way they do it, and this is what we read about, they were even doing this pretty much in genetic modification with plants. They were sucking the guts out of a virus and then putting their payload into that virus and then launching the virus into the organism, because viruses are really good at what? Oh, finding vulnerabilities in cells, invading, and then replicating. And that's why this is pretty dangerous, because once they set it into an organism, this thing just keeps going. And I know we read some stories way back when about how the gene drive could like end all life. But hey, don't worry about it, because the smart people are thinking about adding a kill switch. The first project likely to be tried out in patients, she says, is a treatment for Leber's congenital amaurosis type 10, which is a genetic form of blindness. Now, again, like I said, they already are trying that genetic treatment in the leukemia girl. I'm not sure if it's actual CRISPR technology, but they've edited her bone marrow genes. This congenital amaurosis type 10 is a good choice for a first attempt at making CRISPR-Cas9 work, she says, because it's in the eye, where gene therapies are easier to deliver. Oh my God, stay away from my eyes. And because it is caused by a single genetic misspelling that can be deleted out. It'll be much harder to rewrite genes than to make simple deletions. And yeah, speaking about deleting genes, we saw a story a few weeks ago where they were tinkering around with yeast, and all it took was deleting one gene, and all of a sudden they could live 60% longer. We read a story Friday, I think, though, where they've now identified like 3,260, I think was the number, or 3,258, something like that, numbers of genes in our body out of the 20,000 that our DNA strands contain, 3,200 and some, that if they were deleted, they'd be curtains for us. And like I said, 3,000 out of 20,000, that's like shooting a cue ball into a rack of pool balls and try not to hit the eight ball. Whoops. Hey, that's a pretty high percentage, 3,200 genes, and if something happens to them, you're curtains. Like I said, I am not going to get in the line for this shit at all. Though, again, this may already be happening without our knowledge. You know, as they start putting this stuff into foods and soils and pesticides and air and spraying it, and who the hell knows what else they're doing. You know, I saw last night, it was a huge bunch of storms. There's El Nino coming in from the south across California, wet and warm. And then there was that big low pressure up by Alaska that was sort of swinging down over the Pacific Northwest. And there were blizzard conditions. Supposedly, I didn't see actually what happened, but they were predicting blizzard conditions over Colorado and some areas. And then that all shoots down the backside or the front side of the Rockies, right about to the panhandle of Texas. And as that comes down the panhandle of Texas, you got that El Nino coming straight across, hitting the panhandle of Texas. We had some recipe for some pretty spicy storms down there last night. I'm a storm chaser. I've always been weather junkie since I was a kid, so I watch that stuff. And last night, actually, I got to get there because it's happened pretty late, but it was interesting to me, and you got to wonder what they were working on. Last night, I saw a story pretty damn late that Halliburton, yeah, good old Halliburton, good old Halliburton, who also bought the oil cleanup company right before the BP oil spill, if you remember. Good old Halliburton was hit last night by a massive tornado over a mile wide. And guess what? It completely leveled the Halliburton plant. Completely. Chemical spills and gas leaks reported after massive tornado levels Texas Halliburton plant. That's headlines last night. I mean, it was late, too. Like 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. 3 o'clock in the morning, I think is what it says here. And I started thinking about this. I'm like, oh, wait, Halliburton. Halliburton bought that oil spill company right before BP went off the deep end. And we found the synthetic biology reports for 2013 submitted to Congress, talking all about how the Department of Energy is kind of in charge here of all the synthetic biology. And with Dick Cheney's connections to Halliburton, I mean, you just don't know. So we have this entire Halliburton plant facility, whatever it was. Who knows what they were working on in the labs there? I don't know. That's not public information. Get hit by a mega tornado, and I don't know. We saw pictures of it from the local ABC affiliate. I don't know how big it was. Someone was saying it looked like a Category 5. Could have been. I don't even have stats on wind speeds or anything, but I'm telling you, it was huge. Must have been an oil refinery. Maybe. I don't know. All I'm saying is, and this is just one example, you know, mad science gone mad is being done in all these laboratories of all these corporations. I mean, we think CDC and level 4 DOD labs, right, keeping us safe as they're shipping anthrax that was never killed all over the planet, right? We must have a good handle on all of these, not only virulent pathogens, but mad science gone mad science that's being developed in laboratories without anybody watching the hen house, right? Wrong. Who knows what was going on here with the entire facility that got completely leveled, destroyed, gone by a tornado? And what happened to any of that material that was in there? See, what the reason why I really started thinking about this is because we've talked about Plum Island, which is now in the process of being moved to Manhattan, Kansas. Yes, good old Plum Island. Biological, former biological warfare development labs off coast. Agricultural and livestock biological warfare, supposedly. How that's all being moved to Manhattan, Kansas. And right now, it's being housed at the University of Kansas while they work on their new Plum Island building. And that happens to be in the middle of Tornado Alley. Yes, yes, yes. See, now you see the connecting dots. Boop, 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 boop. All right. Anyway, I don't know. Tangent Tuesday. It just struck me. So who knows? Keep an eye out downstream in the panhandle of Texas. I'm sure that there's lots of cows that we eat that were being raised right there. Oh. You know, for anyone who sits and points and says, Jewel, you are just such a lunatic with the shit you worry about. I'm not. Nobody is watching this. The ones in the know are going, shh, don't tell anyone. Maybe they won't notice. And then sneaking around. And I mean, if you understand about me, like one of the things I can't stand more than anything on this planet about people or individuals in particular are people that walk around and act all sneaky and lie. You know what? I don't give a shit what you do. Just be upfront about it. You know what? You know, if you're out, just as long as you confess. I mean, I might not like it, but at least you manned up. But these guys, they sneak around constantly and try to pull the slick willy. And for anyone who's ever been in a relationship with somebody like that, you know how it makes you psycho. Wee, 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 wee. And that just doesn't go away. I have real issues with people sneaking around, telling bullshit lies, and then thinking they're getting away with something. Because you know what? I get a laser beam, bzzz, and I'm going to expose your ass just to prove a point. Well, I think that's what the case is with all this stuff, because I know they're lying. They're full of shit 24/7. They're selling you a bag of goods, or at least all the people that are out there eating it up. And there's a few of us back here going, wait a second. You lying sack of shit. You're telling like one sentence and there's another 30 paragraphs to go along with this that tell the real truth. Anyway, that's why this stuff gets my goat. So I don't care anymore about this CRISPR. I mean, I do, but I don't. We've read enough. So there's going to be bazillions of dollars. Bill Gates and all of his buddies and venture capitalist firms everywhere are all invested, and it's going to save Johnny from dying of cancer. Yesterday, Friday, I mentioned a couple things, and one of them was disruptive technologies. We talked about that a little bit in the show I ran yesterday, which was last Monday's, and how in the business world, as a manager, as an executive in the business world, one of the things that you have to pay attention to are disruptive technologies, because they have the potential to take your entire business model and flip it on its head. You could be here one day and your business could be out of business because it's no longer required because of something a disruptive technology did. Well, I found something from one of those services that you probably pay, you know, $20,000 a year to get their executive reports to tell you what's going to be hot next year for business planning mode. Disruptive technologies, advances that will transform life, business, and whoops, the global economy. Yes, because the economy is now global, and don't you make a mistake about that. And it's about to get more global with the TPP locking it all down. And now with this Paris terror attack, this is going to give them the opportunity to take all their new toys and all these European countries who said, ha, screw you, USA. We want our own internet because you've been spying on us all these years. We hate you. Well, guess what? Now you got terrorists everywhere. Quote unquote terrorists. And they're invading. And you got refugees everywhere. And they're invading. Now you need our help. You need surveillance. You need biometrics. We had someone come in through Greece with a fingerprint and a passport. Oh, my God. It survived the blast, of course. If we'd had biometrics, this would not have happened. And remember, we even read about like long distance iris scanners that they had cops could scan your iris while you're sitting in your car through your rearview mirror. Those are things called disruptive technologies. All right, let's read a little bit of this. The relentless parade of new technologies is unfolding on many fronts. And almost every advance is billed as a breakthrough. And the list of the, quote, next big things grows ever longer. And that's what worries me. Like, this is just exponential, out of control, like we have never before seen. Not every emerging technology will alter the business or social landscape, but some truly do have the potential to disrupt the status quo, alter the way people live and work, and rearrange value pools. It is therefore critical that business and policy leaders understand which technologies will matter to them and prepare accordingly. Yeah. I'm not even going to make a comment on that one. Disruptive technologies, advances that will transform life, business, and the global economy, a report from McKinsey Global Institute, cuts through the noise and identifies 12 technologies that could truly drive massive economic transformations, ding, ding, and disruptions, ding, ding, in the coming years. The report also looks at exactly how these technologies could change our world, as well as their benefits and challenges. We don't worry about challenges. We let it all loose first, deal with that later, and offers guidelines to help leaders from businesses and other institutions respond. We estimate that together, applications of the 12 technologies discussed in the report could have a potential economic impact between $14 trillion and $33 trillion a year by 2025. That's 10 years from now. And this estimate is neither predictive nor comprehensive. It is based on an in-depth analysis of key potential applications and the value that they could create in a number of ways, including the consumer surplus that arises from better products, lower prices, a cleaner environment, and better health. Consumer surplus. It's not just going to be consumer surplus of products. I think they're meaning like consumer surplus, like way more people out there that are potentially involved. Consumer surplus. Some technologies in the report have been gestating for years and thus will be familiar. Others are more surprising. And you know, I downloaded Open Sesame, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, hurry up. I did. I downloaded a PDF because they only listed two technologies on this executive summary that I'm reading. And of course, they put all these fucking pictures. Yes, because you pay $1,300 for one of these. Here you go. All right, 12 potentially economically disruptive technologies. Mobile internet. And this is, we're talking probably like countries like Africa with Google balloons and Facebook internet satellites. Mobile internet. Increasingly inexpensive and capable mobile computing devices and internet connectivity. And yeah, cheaper devices here, but internet in Africa. The mobile, as far as investments, mobile growth, I think the last time I read one of those Gartner reports, they were predicting like 60% growth here in the next year or two. So it's not done yet. Got to connect the whole world. Number two, disruptive technology, automation of knowledge work. Yes, being replaced by software. Intelligent software systems that can perform knowledge work tasks involving unstructured commands and subtle judgments. I would consider knowledge work to be something like an accountant or a legal assistant. Number three, potentially economic disruptive technologies. Oh, we've talked about all these. Internet of Things. Yay, the Internet of Things. Let's get our shirt and our TV and our refrigerator and vacuum cleaner. And oops, let's make sure we get Nana's tumor on line two with nanotechnology. I mean, guys, this is all coming. Networks of low-cost sensors and actuators for data collection, monitoring, decision-making, and process optimization. Don't worry about it, DARPA Dan said. DARPA is working on securing the Internet of Things, so you don't have to worry about Nana being hacked. Number four, cloud technology. Talked about this one, too. How convenient it's going to be when everything's saved up in the cloud and scans, but it'll be for your own good because those pesky hackers won't be able to get it on your machine anymore. We'll have Amazon or Google or Microsoft or Dropbox holding on to all your shit for you, making sure it's safe. Number five, advanced robotics. Increasingly capable robots with enhanced senses, dexterity, and intelligence used to automate tasks or augment humans. And yes, there was an entire Chinese factory. We talked about that one. They built it 90% robots, mostly supervisors. I saw now, was Hitachi or Toyota? That story was up here somewhere on one of these computers. They actually now are building robots. Oh, is this a, no. Are building robots to now try to replace like all the cheap Chinese labor. I mean, this is bad. When all of a sudden, all the cheap Chinese labor that we've been fighting against all this time is now going to be replaced with robots. Robots that don't get sick, don't commit suicide and jump out buildings, don't require a paycheck. Yeah, those robots. So, yeah, keep an eye out. We thought we had issues with cheap goods before. All right. Number six, I believe this is autonomous and near autonomous vehicles. I saw a Google car, first one ever to get a ticket. They didn't know who to give the ticket to. They gave it a ticket because it was driving too slow. Vehicles that can navigate and operate with reduced or no human intervention. Number seven, next generation genomics. I was reading, too, the other day, so this genome project that I've been watching since I was in college was completed in 2003. So in the last 12 years, we've had this next generation crazy happening. 12 years. That's all it took. Fast, low-cost gene sequencing, advanced big data analytics, and synthetic biology. And number eight, energy storage. And I wanted to check to see how that new Tesla whole house battery was doing, but they've been making leaps and bounds in energy storage almost every day, every other day. I get articles in my feed out of some of my science magazines, so some of the new stuff that they've been working with. I just saw there was some amazing material that could replace lithium that was environmentally friendly, that was held even more of a charge. I'll have to find that one. I posted that somewhere. Number eight or nine, 3D printing. Additive manufacturing techniques to create objects by printing layers of materials based on digital models. We talked about 3D printing at length, not only for building houses and building clothes. I mean, they were talking about this new material they could put in there and do 3D printed clothing. We could freaking print ears and kidneys, you know, stem cells. Bzz, bzz, bzz. going to be 3D nutraceutical bug protein food in the shape of Mickey Mouse soon. 3D printing is definitely, and plastic guns. 3D printing is definitely a disruptive technology. Number 10, advanced materials. Materials designed to have superior characteristics or functionality. And I would say a lot of this, just by looking at the picture, it looks like carbon nanotubules. This is using nanotechnology for these superior substances. And I will predict very soon that they are going to have something lightweight if they don't already. And I know they have been working on it with carbon as a very thin radiation shield that they might be able to put into some sort of space vehicle to get outside of the ionosphere finally. Number 11, advanced gas and oil exploration and recovery. Exploration and recovery techniques that make the extraction of unconventional oil and gas economical. It looks like that's fracking. I don't know if I'd call that. I'd call that disruptive, yes. But not probably one of the big money makers, but maybe. And then, of course, number 12 is renewable energy, which should be on the top of the food chain that we should be focusing on. Generation of electricity from renewable sources with reduced harmful climate impact. Yes. So these are the 12. And out of these disruptive technologies, we have bazillions of dollars that are being dumped into research. One of these things, and you know, they don't mention it in here, they don't talk about mental health developments as a disruptive technology, but see, once Google got into the life sciences division, Google Alphabet, their Calico life sciences project, that now brings anything to do with healthcare under the guise of disruptive technologies, because they have their hands in everything. And, you know, they're connecting all these dots together as business models to make money. So we have this new, and it's beyond making money, control, money, manipulation, everything. But it's all about money. It's a motivator. So we have the head of the National Institute of Mental Health who's going over to Google Life Sciences. He said in an interview or a story that we read last week that one of the things he'd like one of his first projects to be would be a smartphone application that would help in the diagnoses of mental health. We also saw a story that talked about, yeah, mental health now isn't, you know, just one label. It's a whole spectrum of labels. And this just opens the door now to mental health as well as physical health being a new cash cow. And anyone they don't like, and maybe we can look at this tomorrow, we found a couple studies. There was one out of publicintelligence.net that I dropped in the chat yesterday. It was financed by the Department of Defense as well as others. DARPA was listed in there. But it was all about understanding the neurobiology behind radicalization. And how groups get together and ideas of groups that you confer with can help radicalize you. And that's the problem in this world. We have too many radicalized people getting together in groups with radical ideas. And we need to find ways to fix this. And when we look at all the DARPA research with being able to remove and replace memories and flashes of light and sound and all in the name of curing PTSD patients and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, you could sure see where this is going. There was the one story, and I'll save this one because I got it open, about the neurobiology of radicalization that they're working on studying. But there was another one on getting around resistant consumers to technology. We've talked about this. We're resistant consumers. I don't know. There was nothing ever wrong with resistant consumers in the past. If you didn't like it, you didn't buy it. But guess what? They're going to force you to. They're going to find a way. We got to find a way to trick those people who are onto us to eat it up. The consumer resistant behavior toward innovation. So I got a paper on that too that they're working on. So I think we'll dig into those tomorrow. But in the meantime, the story came out last week, and we didn't get a chance to touch on it because there's too much going on. This would be a good way to end up the show today. Study comes out the other day. Increasingly, so we got to come up with like all kinds of ways to diagnose you as mentally ill. So if we ever need to bag and tag you and black bag you, take you off somewhere and medicate you, we have one now, right? Increasingly twisted sense of humor could be early signs of dementia. Might as well get neighbors pointing at everybody. I mean, I keep seeing this ad, speaking about neighbors pointing at everyone. This ad that keeps popping up on Facebook. Want to go on a vacation? Call this number and blow in your employer for using unlicensed software. It will give you a reward to use for a vacation. Yeah. See something, say something. Call them in, blow them in, make some money. That's the way it works. At least it wasn't a Walmart gift card. Anyway, so here's another way. Now let's cast suspicion on all those people with odd senses of humor that laugh at things that seem to be dark. Although a warped sense of humor may earn you lots of laughs among your equally twisted friends, it could be an early sign of dementia, says a new study. The research found that patients began laughing at inappropriate things prior to being diagnosed. The study, conducted at the University College at London and published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, questioned the relatives and friends of 48 frontotemporal dementia patients, and the respondents were asked to give examples of inappropriate humor exhibited by their loved ones over the last 15 years, long before any diagnoses. And almost all of the participants said that they had noticed a shift in 9 years before their loved ones were diagnosed. So now let's do an FBI-esque study of all of your family members and friends and start asking them about your behavior. And let's give people tests and see what they think's funny. Give it a thumbs up. Yes. And they even mentioned Monty Python as an indicator. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Tuesday Live Radio. And I will-